If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
I don't buy a lot of parks, even though they might be great deals and I could make a lot of money on them, because it doesn't define to my strategy. And the more you're able to do that, the quicker you're able to analyze deals and the better you can build a portfolio that's best suited for you.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Ian graduated from Virginia Tech with a major in finance. He began his career in the financial development program at Genworth Financial. He then joined Parkway Properties, a Class A office REIT, as a member of the investments division. During his tenure at Parkway, Ian underwrote over $1 billion in acquisitions and dispositions. Ian left to start Archimedes Group with Ryan Naris in Charlotte, North Carolina. They have sourced, participated, and closed over $20 million in deals since 2016. Ian focuses on growing and operating the portfolio. Ian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh man, this is great. This is great. I love the people who have taken, really started from nothing and grown just a successful business. And I'd love to kind of hear your story. The same questions I ask everybody that comes on is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there? If you can kind of give us that brief overview, I'd love to hear that.
Absolutely. So I graduated college, went into corporate finance. I was kind of just took a job. I graduated in 2012. Didn't really know what I wanted to do. Just kind of took the first job I had. It was a developmental program, and it was kind of finance and accounting for an insurance company. And I learned pretty quickly I didn't want to do that. That was not where my passions lied. But I didn't find a mentor or a boss that showed me the world of real estate. So I decided to push on that, learn more. I bought my first house at 23, I guess what they call house hacking now, with another business partner. And I lived there for 11 months and continued to push on real estate, meeting lots of people, and then landed a job in Orlando, Florida, working for a REIT. And I was working on their investments team. I was given a shot to work and understand commercial real estate from an institutional scale, which was really beneficial and a great experience. Lived there for about 2.5 years, but they went through a merger. And at that time, I was always trying to do something on the side. I'd realized, you know, I didn't want to be relying on one person and I wanted to do my own deals. At that time, when the merger took place, I decided to jump off and do my own business. And I've been focused on mobile home parks since, you know, November of 2016 is when I jumped off full time and haven't really looked back since. Now we've done about 17 deals and 1,500 lots, and we currently are managing, you know, a little over 600 lots with about 200 under contract. So that has been where, you know, a pretty concise version of what we're doing and kind of where we're at. And now we're continuing to grow and push to the next level.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, that is massive action. You know, a lot of people that kind of, it takes them a lot longer to do what you have done. So I would love to hear what it was, you know, how did you, one, have the courage to take that first step? I mean, obviously you got kind of a front row seat to how these deals are structured, I think, at the REIT. Is that right?
To some extent. That was public money though, so they didn't really use a lot of debt. They had a credit facility so they could buy things cash. You know, they weren't really structuring deals and syndications the way, you know, a lot of the private markets work. So it was good in terms of valuation of real estate and understanding kind of the moving parts. But since it was a publicly traded company and they're issuing stock and they, you know, there's tax aspects of real estate and it was just, you know, a multi-billion dollar company, I didn't learn too much from the capital raising part from there because I just wasn't too involved in that.
Right. Yeah. So that's interesting. So what would you say some of the keys were? I guess maybe even if it wasn't at the REIT, what were some of the keys that you went that kind of helped you go from, hey, I'm interested in real estate to now I own 17 mobile home parks?
Yeah, it was an evolution. You know, I wouldn't say that was where I was the day I started. I always wanted to do, you know, some deals on the side. After I bought my first house at 23, I realized I wanted to do more. I wanted to buy more. And so in Orlando, I tried to buy more homes. And at the time, the numbers didn't make sense or I wasn't able to find the deals that made sense. So I continued to iterate until I found an asset class that made a lot of sense. And mobile home parks was one that captured my attention for a lot of reasons that we can jump into. And through that, I would say I had a lot of mentors that helped like expand my thinking and allowed me to see the world maybe a little bit bigger than I was currently looking at it. And so, you know, put one foot in front of the other, take enough action, and in 4 years, you can be surprised by how much work you can actually get done.
Right, right. So you did bring some mentors on board along the way that kind of helped lead you down this path.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I've been very fortunate to work. So my former boss is now one of my biggest investors. And then we've also worked with one of the biggest, one of the top 30 operators in the country. He has like 6,000 lots that he's a majority owner of. And, you know, we worked with him and done several deals with him as well. And having that where, you know, someone's looking down, they're, you know, 20 rungs of the ladder ahead of you, you start to see the world a little differently. And you start to realize that, you know, your own potential is sometimes capped by own limitations in your mind.
Right, right. No, that's fascinating. That's fascinating. Okay, very cool. So tell us about the first deal.
Yeah, so the first deal we did, I was still working at the REIT, and I was able to connect with a broker who was up and coming. And so kind of what I did was, in exchange for getting access to off-market deals, I'll give her a lot of, you know, feedback on her OMs and just, you know, feedback in general from things that she could keep in mind while she was going through the deal making process, even if I didn't even want that deal. So we had a mutually, you know, beneficial relationship where I got access to off-market deals. At the same time, she got a lot of feedback from me in terms of how maybe an outside viewer might view this, so she could prepare for questions. A deal came along and we were able to put in an offer just through networking with a large group at the time. And we were able to structure the deal. They brought in a lot of the money and we got a finder's fee, which we kept portion in the deal and then cashed out some of that and then used that as kind of like a springboard into the next deal.
Right, right. Okay. So you guys brought an equity partner in that could help provide the funding for the project, or at least the equity side of it.
They were the operational partner too. I mean, they had the operational expertise too. So it was more of we were kind of just the bird dog in that scenario. We were trying to use that deal as one where we could be learned operationally from them, adopt their operations, so then we could apply it to other things as a way to learn. That deal particularly didn't turn out exactly the way we wanted, but it was at least allowing us to get into a deal. We made a little money and then we could apply some lessons to the deals along the road.
What do you mean when you say that deal didn't turn out the way you wanted?
Yeah, so I guess we were looking for a little bit more of a operational education there, and that particular deal just didn't get the level of attention that we thought it would when we first went into that, just, you know, given the amount of turnaround that was there. This particular group was focused on a lot of other acquisitions, so we didn't get that education. So we actually got that at two deals later. We got a massive like apprenticeship type education within the mobile home park space that we, you know, a lot of those lessons we still use today.
Right. Now that's interesting. Yeah. Cause I would think that would be a great way to do that. You bring the deal, maybe you get a little bit of finder's fee, but your intention was to learn, you know, from this industry expert, and it just didn't pan out that way. Do you guys still involved in that deal, or is that still in your portfolio?
No, we cashed out of that about a year and a half ago. We kind of just said, hey, you know, we'd like to go a different way and just use that money. That money felt like it was dead money. We weren't really getting many distributions on it. It just felt like it was an overlooked deal at that point. So we asked for our money out of that deal, and, you know, and then they actually sold it a year later for a monster number. So we would have made way more by keeping keeping it in the deal. But at that point in time, I have no regrets, because that capital we able to multiply in other ways and putting in other deals.
Right, right. But you didn't give up on that method. Like, you went out and said, hey, look, I know this is the right method. We just maybe didn't find the right partner to execute, you know, and get our education. Because then you partnered with somebody else on like you said, two deals later. And you said you got just a massive education.
Yeah, so we structured that one a little differently. So that was a 500 lot opportunity, which is,
wow,
a massive deal. Those don't really come around. We were, you know, that's kind of where hard work and luck come together. Like, the opportunity for that to happen today is very low, just given the amount of interest in the space. But we got a really good deal on a $10 million acquisition. It was another like finder's fee thing where we kept some money in the deal And then we became the operators of that deal. So we were living in the mobile home park for 14 months back. So Ryan and I were switching off. So Ryan would live there for a week. I would live there for a week in a double wide on a blow up mattress. And so we did that from June of 2017 to August of 2018. And that was a massive turnaround project. And we learned more than you could ever learn in a very short, condensed period of time that we apply a lot of those lessons to our portfolio today.
Right. So let me get this right. It's a $10 million acquisition and you're living in a double wide on a blow up mattress.
Yep.
That's what it takes, man. That's awesome. I love that. I love that. I mean, you guys rolled up your sleeves and did what you had to do. So talk to us about some of the lessons, I guess, that you guys learned doing that.
Yeah. So, I mean, we negotiated to be managers. So we got, you know, a small salary. We were making like $35,000 a year or something like that, as well as, you know, we had some equity. So we got some distributions, but there wasn't anything, you know, crazy. But what we learned in that experience, I mean, we had all, like I dealt with people who were on meth, and then I, you know, dealing with exploding sewer pipes and bringing in new homes and having to go, I was in an eviction court several times. I worked with, you know, we built out 30 RV pads at that particular community. I dealt with the permit office. We were dealing with titles constantly. So it, you know, it's everything you could have asked for and more. As well as dealing with contractors. Like our second month, we spent $40,000 on HVACs, and we found out we had a bad contractor. So we had to redo like $25,000 worth of that work. So we made a massive error in judgment there. We had room to make errors, but at the same time, we had some guardrails working with this operator who we're still very friendly with today. And he gave us an opportunity that we likely probably wouldn't have had, but this is his nicest deal that he has in his portfolio today. And, you know, in 14 months, that deal, the equity creation in that deal was $5.5 million. So like we didn't get, you know, a huge amount of that, but what it did was we realized the system in which we could apply that to ourselves. So then we were able to buy quite a few other deals, and, you know, now we're able to see a lot more of a return than we were when we first there. But we put in our time and understand the structure and systems in which to operate and turn around these assets.
Right, right. And is that what you focus on now more is turnaround parks?
Yeah, I'd say a lot of our deals are mostly turnaround. I mean, we have some that are stabilized, but pricing has come up quite a bit since that time frame. But we are still growing and still dealing with a lot of mobile home parks that have a lot of hair on them and need a lot of work. I'd say that's kind of where a lot of our time is focused.
Right, right. Yeah, I can imagine having the right processes in place, especially in a turnaround situation, would be key. What are some of the things you look for? Like, let's say you go into a turnaround park. Let's get into the kind of nitty gritty a little bit. Let's say you go into a turnaround park. Like, what's one of the first, you know, three things you guys are going to do?
Yeah. So what we find for the most part, mom and pops are pretty poor at, you know, raising rents and collecting, right? Those are kind of the two things that they really struggle with. They get really friendly with the residents. They're not very firm in terms of their collections. And then they wait 10 years to actually raise rent. So it's a combination of both of those as well. They're not usually very good at fixing up units. So there's two types of units in mobile home parks. One is the tenant owns the home and rents the land. And the next one is you own the home. And it's kind of like a horizontal apartment complex. So what we usually do is we buy homes that have large amounts of ones where we own, and then we'll sell it off to the resident or another tenant to own the home themselves. And we're able to set things at market rent, as well as bringing down a lot of the expenses associated with, you know, fixing up really old mobile homes.
Right, right. So one of the first things that you said raising rents, but then also, you know, selling off the park owned homes. How does that work? Like, what's a typical purchase price for someone who's moving into a park of a? I mean, obviously, it probably depends on the age and the condition of the home, but what's that typically look like?
Yeah, just a really park dependent and market dependent. So not all markets can support, you know, sometimes we sell handyman specials where we sell them as is, and some people like to do their own work to them. So we'll sell them like for like $500, but they need, you know, $2,000-$3,000 worth of work. Other times we'll sell, like, for example, we have a home park in Knoxville, and a lot of those homes in general, probably 10,000, just because we have to do all the work to rehab, which is fine. It's just for us to do that and make a little bit of return on that home. Those homes are much nicer quality than some of our other communities. Those homes are closer to like 10, 15. If we have to bring in a home to a vacant lot from a used home, the setup costs, the home itself, the transport, the decks, the HVAC and all that, we're like $20,000 to $25,000 just to bring a home to on site. So we usually just try to break even there.
Right, right. Okay. So you're just trying to really get your money back out in that situation, but really not have something else for you to manage because you guys really want to be in the lot rent business.
It's only real sustainable way that I see the scale. I mean, unless if you want huge amounts of employee overhead, which isn't really our game, but you know, if you want to be, if you see yourself as trying to, you know, position your portfolio as being the most attractive girl in the bar, right? Like if you want to be the one where the most amount of people want your product at the end of the day, after you fix everything, lot rent is where a lot of, you know, operators, banks, and just capital is attracted to.
Right, right. And that makes sense because, I mean, you've cut out a lot of the management headaches by doing that. What does it look like for the homes that you guys do still retain? If you own it, do you still own any park-owned homes or no?
Yeah. I mean, our large amount of portfolio is constantly in transition since we're constantly buying stuff. So, I mean, ultimately we want to get to a point where we don't have homes. I mean, we've given away homes for free too. Like some of our older residents who don't have huge amounts of money, you know, we've given homes away to them too. So it's a case by case basis, but I'd say a lot of the rougher parks, there's probably 40-year-old homes, you know, smaller two bedrooms, two bath, a flat roof. You know, there's just, if you look at homes in the past, they're just smaller in general than the homes that are usually built today. And so that's common. But if you're in like the 90s, if we're trying to replace homes, we try to get 90s and older. So like within 30 years, and that allows us to get more 3-2s, three bedrooms, two bathrooms, which is a lot more desirable for families today than, you know, a 2-1 or a 1-1, which are some of these homes, they're 2-1s, but they're really 1-1s for how small that second bedroom is. And so that's, we love communities where most of the bedrooms are 3-2s or large 2-2s, because just that's what the market kind of demands.
That's awesome. When it comes to kind of how the market has shifted for you guys, I know the mobile home park space has obviously generated a lot of buzz here, especially in the last 5-6 years. I even feel like it gets talked about even more every year. So what have you seen market dynamics look like? What do you forecast the future to be for mobile home parks? I guess, can you speak to those things at all?
Yeah, I mean, I really think there's a passing of the baton, right? So from the mom and pops to the sophisticated institutional, whatever you want to call the new age investor coming in who has more processes, who's a little bit more, I guess, say rational, which can be negative too, in terms of driving rents on people who don't have other places to go too quickly. So there's positive and negatives to that. But I will say, in general, I think lending is going to ease on this. So usually a lot of stuff we do is recourse financing, but the agencies are coming in harder and expanding their ability to work on, you know, mobile home parks and just being more flexible there. So I expect that to continue. My guess is that, you know, capital will continue to rush into this space and prices will continue to drive up and cap rates will continue to compress. My guess is that in 5 to 7 years, the amount of opportunities that are available today will be much less. A lot of people make it akin to the self-storage space, you know, 10, 15 years ago, just given the amount of consolidation taking place. I expect something similar to happen here. I don't know exactly in terms of timing. I'll say lot rents in general are going to be driven up pretty substantially. I mean, we're under contract for a park that hadn't raised rents for 10 plus years.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, those are the places where you can find opportunity, though, I would imagine. I mean, that's what you're looking for. So, yeah, I was really going to find. So you're going to see more consolidation in this space. So what does it look like for you guys? Like, what's your long game, you know, with these mobile home parks? Are you guys going to hold them until it makes sense to sell them? Or, I mean, I guess what's that look like for you guys? Like, what's the end of the road for you look like in this space?
Yeah, I mean, our goal is to rush to 1,000 within 4 hours of where we live. So right now, I'd say we're, you know, 60% of the way there with another 20% under contract. And our goal is to reevaluate after that point. At that point, you know, we'll have 1,000 units within, you know, 20 parks, maybe give or less, give or take. And that will allow us to reassess if we want to keep continue to grow or if we want to recapitalize our portfolio, if we want to sell our portfolio, it just gives us the optionality because at least you're interesting enough that you can, you know, have the operation in place that someone could step into that and pay you a reasonable price. That would have a nice, you know, capital event for all the partners involved. And that allows just optionality. You know, it's not saying we'll definitely sell when we get there, but it will say, you know, we'll be able to, and we'll likely be able to maximize without us, you know, having to, you know, 2.5x our portfolio to get to the next rung of cap rate compression.
Got it. Got it. That's interesting. Let's jump into the final four here if we can. If you're to distill everything you know about the mobile home park space, and you've got a fast education in a few short number of years. So I think this is awesome. So kind of rewinding, like, is there one piece of advice that you would give to an aspiring investor?
Really understand your strategy. Like, everyone comes into this space and wants to buy parks all over the country. And I think the problem with that is the lack of focus leads to lack of results. So having a defined strategy within the space and understanding why that strategy makes sense for you is the best thing that you can do in order to be successful. Like, I don't buy a lot of parks, even though they might be great deals and I could make a lot of money on them, because it doesn't define to my strategy. And the more you're able to do that, the quicker you're able to analyze deals and the better you can build a portfolio that's best suited for you.
Right. No, that's great. What's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I write my goals down every day, which is helpful just to kind of remind myself of where I want to be focused on. And I try to meditate every morning as well, just to kind of keep a clear head, you know, put things into perspective as well. So, I mean, those two are, you know, daily activities that I do that at least help me stay focused on the goal at hand.
Right. No, that's awesome. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
So Ryan and I do mentorship for people. We also take calls with a lot of people and just give out, you know, free advice. But we have a new paid mentorship program that we feel is a great opportunity for people to, you know, have access and give them structure. And some of our students have had some amazing results to get into this space and really chop down their learning curve to get into it and start to experience some of the financial freedom that we've been able to through mobile home parks. And that's been something that we've been really passionate about over the past 6 months. And I'm excited to see where that goes. And then second, we also do charity stuff with throughout our parks as well. Like, we've given away a partial college scholarship. We helped pay off a furniture rental for one of our residents. And we're starting to do some more charity within our communities to kind of give back to the residents who've given us so much.
Right. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. And if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways. So we're on LinkedIn. Feel free to reach out to me there. Also, we have a free Facebook group called Mobile Home Park or MHP Mastermind. There's about 2,000 members in it. Ryan and I run it. More than welcome to join that. There's a lot of great conversations going on there and a lot of deal flow flowing around. So if you're interested in, you know, learning more about the space, come join us there. Definitely great places to connect.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thanks so much for your time today. I certainly appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.